We'll commence with the RIN report for June 25, 2010 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the RIN report. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. This week, we bring you our third and final excerpt from the Amateur Radio and the Law Forum, held last month during the Dayton Hamvention. This time, we present the good-looking forum speaker, Paula Yushin, K9IR, a practicing attorney and ARRL volunteer counsel. Her topic is RFI issues and your neighbors.
Let me just take a quick survey. Who has WAS? Raise your hand. WAS, worked all stereos. Who has WAC? Yeah, I still got some worked all CD players. Very good. We want to get you off of this award list and onto the real award list that these acronyms represent. So let's talk about that. Our agenda today, let's talk about some good news first of all. Let's keep that smile that Fred put on your faces. Let's keep it on your face during this presentation as well. And then we're going to go to Ripped from the Headlines, part one. A little bit of information on handling RFI complaints, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. And then we'll go to Ripped from the Headlines, part D. So the good news, federal preemption, and this was something that Fred mentioned briefly as well. Historically, preemption, what it means is the federal government has acted in a way, and in what way I'll get to in a moment, the federal government has acted in a way to clearly indicate that only the feds can legislate or regulate certain activities. They have preempted the ability of other units of government, typically state and local government, to do the same. And so historically, we've had preemption when it comes to radio frequency interference from decades back under a theory commonly known in the law as occupying the field. What that phrase just means in a nutshell is the feds have so pervasively regulated in a particular area that they have occupied the field. They've taken up all the space, the regulatory space, if you will, for controlling a certain activity, and therefore it is deemed, even if the feds have not come out and said explicitly, we're preempting this, even if they haven't explicitly done that, they've so occupied the field that it is implicit. And so for decades we had that available. But then things started getting really good starting in 1982, and there's another concept. You guys will be ready to practice law practically after you leave here today. There's another concept in law known as legislative history. And typically that's just involved with all the comments that our legislators make as they're considering a piece of legislation and discussing it and helping define what they really intend to do when they're going to pass it. Any of the paperwork that may have been submitted as part of their consideration in voting on the legislation. And so in 1982, when certain changes were made to our lovely Communications Act of 1934, those legislators in this legislative history were kind enough to say that some of those changes were to clarify the reservation of exclusive jurisdiction to the Federal Communications Commission over matters involving RFI. Such matters shall not be regulated by local or state law, nor shall radio transmitting apparatus be subject to local or state regulation, et cetera, et cetera. So we're not quite at this point in 1982 at a stage where the law is saying this, but at least we've got some legislative history to go along with all this occupying the field stuff. So that was pretty cool. But then it gets even better. We had some amendments in the year 2000, and it's in section 302AF2 for those of you who afterward have nothing too much better to do but go to those tomes that are on the shelves of the law library and maybe even your local library. And here's an explicit statement that any station that's licensed by the commission pursuant to section 301, and suffice it to say, it's kind of like reading the Internal Revenue Code. You know, you read one section and it cross-references you to another section and it cross-reference, and you know, you're reading the whole code by the time you finish. But if you go to 301, amateur radio is one of those radio services licensed under section 301. A station that's licensed under 301 shall not be subject to action by a state or local government under this subsection. And this subsection is dealing, actually, a lot of this in section F here is dealing with regulation of CB radio, where the government says you can regulate some of that, but it's expressly saying this allowance for you to bring the hammer down on the CBers, no pun intended, and that was unintended. That does not apply for amateur radio or really for any other service that's licensed. So this is probably our most express indication of this concept of preemption. So it's a good thing because it means, among other things, that we've got a single entity to deal with. With antenna ordinances and such, you've got a myriad of localities that are regulating. Here we've got express statements that we just have to deal with what the FCC has got in place. So it's some pretty good stuff. As I said, that's good news. So now we're going to move on, rip from the headlines. So Chicago Tribune in the money and real estate section in February of this year. I open up the Sunday paper and I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow. There's this section that appears periodically that a lawyer, and I don't know where she's based, but a lawyer, it's probably some syndicated column. And here we go, communicate to quiet the static over tenants' ham radio tower. So I figure, well, I've got to read this and see what's going on because this could be useful for Dayton this year. Here's part of the article that appeared right in the newspaper. This is a landlord who was saying that the tenants who lease a single-family residence that he had available became ham radio enthusiasts, and among other things, you know, the unsightly stuff and all the other things that really, as Fred pointed out, are not really relevant. They say it emits an annoying noise that disrupts their sleep. Now, I will tell you right now, I don't know what that annoying noise was. Is, well, it could be anything from a rotator to, I actually had a neighbor one time complain to me that the wind blowing over the drain holes of my then trapped Yagi were freaking his kids out. Yeah, this was, you know, I but every fiber in me wanted to talk about the wind chimes on his deck, but I held myself back. Anyway, so that the tenants claim under federal law they're entitled to erect what they need to get reception, is this true? Well, we already know from Fred the simple answer is yes! But I'm talking about RFI here. So in part, the response in this newspaper column is you can't resolve the noise issue satisfactorily. That may be reason enough to demand that the antenna come down. Remember, your tenants cannot annoy the neighbors. It's a private nuisance, etc., etc. Wrong. Wrong. As we know from the two other slides with good news, this is something that doesn't apply for our radio frequency interference issue. Somebody cannot go after you on a private nuisance action under state or local ordinances and say, because of, assuming this annoying noise is radio frequency interference, to go after you on this. Why? Because the federal government has preempted the regulation on that. If anybody can go after you on this, it's going to be the feds, specifically the FCC. So this is wrong, and among other things, it points out to you that you can read some things in the paper, even some things that are written by a lawyer who otherwise had some very rational things to say in this article about working things out with your neighbors, which we'll get to in a moment. So very, very rational, but absolutely wrong as a matter of law on this point. So keep that in mind. Let's go further. As an additional part of this response, the lawyer notes, hopefully you have a clause in your lease specifying that the tenants have to get your approval before installing that sort of an improvement. And if you have that clause and they didn't get the approval ahead of time, now you have grounds. Little bit different issue here, and maybe you're still thinking, well, but she talked about that preemption issue. Here's the catch, and here's why you have to be careful. You can have private contract terms, and a lease is simply a contract for you to make use of premises over the period of time defined in the lease. You can enter into a private contract that, frankly, you can contract away any of your rights that you want, including your right to be able to put up a tower, your right to be able to transmit with or without the interference involved. Of course, we're not supposed to be interfering, but the susceptibility of other equipment. You can contract away your right to rely on the FCC or the federal government preemption. That's something that's very important to keep in mind.
You're listening to a talk given by ARRL Volunteer Counsel and attorney Paula Yushin, K9IR. We'll continue her presentation delivered at the Dayton Hamvention last month in a moment. This is The Rain Report. You'll find us at twitter.com/ The Rain Report. We'll be right back.
This applies as well when you have private deed restrictions or these CC&Rs that Jim and Fred have mentioned earlier. So a lot of times in CC&Rs, you will see language identical or very similar to, you are barred from engaging in any loud, noxious, or offensive activities that may disturb the peace and quiet. And of course, that's not necessarily limited, nor even necessarily written with amateur radio in mind. You know, they probably don't want the cow next door and a whole host of other things. But it will apply to prevent you from going forward. So you may be asking yourself, well, there's this federal preemption, and there's PRB 1, and there's reasonable accommodation, and all these other things that Fred told us about. Why doesn't that work here? Part of the reason is because it's a private transaction versus a governmental action. So when you have a unit of government, as Fred pointed out, that's got a restriction on height, that's something that we can go after. If I choose to buy into a neighborhood, as Jim pointed out, that's got this covenant condition or restriction of record, I'm stuck with it. I've entered into a private arrangement, that's not a government restriction, and I can enter into a private lease on property as well and have the same issue. I have that freedom of choice. And unless and until things change, with the efforts underway by the league right now to get some change made at the federal level to say, you know what, PRB 1 reasonable accommodation requirement should be extended into a CC&R situation, unless and until that happens, this is something we are going to need to live with. So the good news on this particular incident, ripped from the headlines, is that had this been your own private residence and somebody wanted to sue you for nuisance, that's not going to work. That's not going to be a legitimate action. If, however, you are a tenant and you have agreed to enter into a lease where there is a restriction or a requirement for permission to do this, you have to follow the terms of the lease. Let's talk about our responsibilities in handling RFI complaints. We need to be operating consistent with Part 97. We all have copies of Part 97, right? Current copies. We are responsible for any interference resulting from a violation of any FCC rules that are in place. We do have a responsibility for that. Another useful thing to look at is how your own consumer equipment is dealing with your transmissions. I mean, if you can sit in your shack and be key down with the alpha and everything else is fine in your house, then it's a lot harder for a neighbor to be complaining because you can say, well, you know, come on over and look at what I've got. I mean, I understand you've got an issue here, but I don't have that issue with some of this equipment. So maybe the issue isn't with the transmitter. Maybe the issue is with what's in your house. I actually had a neighbor who, I didn't find this out until mercifully, this gentleman and his family moved away because he was the neighbor from hell. I found out from the people who moved in some interesting things about him, among them being the new owners were scratching their head trying to figure out how in the heck he had wired up the house for the phones that were supposed to be in use. And it dawned on me, oh, so I'll bet that was a big reason why I had a problem or he had a problem with my transmissions getting into his phone. Among other things, I'm figuring he probably had some perfect dipoles set up there that, you know, and if he'd worked some DX for me, I would have been okay with it, but he didn't. So, what are the do's? We want to cooperate. So if we have a neighbor complaining, well, every fiber in our being may want to scream out, you toad, you idiot, please get away. This is preempted. Let's cooperate. Let's be diplomatic in our dealings. It's always very persuasive to acknowledge to people that you have some responsibility in any situation. Hey, you know what? I have to do things the right way. I have to operate in compliance with FCC rules. My equipment has to be compliant. I couldn't even buy it if it wasn't compliant with certain requirements and such. So acknowledge that, but then make sure that they understand that they have some responsibilities too, and that the equipment that they're buying and setting up, it just doesn't give them carte blanche to say, well, hey, anything that's getting in there is your problem. You know, as I like to say, gee, your alarm clock is receiving radio signals. Why would it be doing that? It's not a radio, is it? Oh, maybe there's something wrong, don't you think? Here's what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't go techie on them. I can guarantee you, if you start talking about radio waves and dipoles and resonant frequency lengths for wire and this and that, you're going to lose them right away. An example of that happened one time when this same neighbor from the depths of Hades called me one time to say, have you been on the air? And I said, well, no, not today. Well, my TV's not working right. So I turned on the TV and I turned on to channel 2. This was in the old pre-HD days, by the way. So we had to have been in the midst of one of the most dramatic solar activities that I'd ever seen. I was actually glad he had called me because I would have missed this great opportunity to see Channel 2 cycle from complete snow to a completely clear picture and back and oscillate like over a 30-second period up and back with this. And it was just a thing to behold. Well, how do you explain this to your neighbor? That it's not even a matter of RFI at this point. I admit, though, I made the mistake. I did try to explain the fact that it was a solar flare activity, and he probably figured at that point, oh, my God, she's on the meds again, or she's off the meds, and she should be on the meds, whatever it was. It's very, very difficult. The only way you can get away with that kind of story is if there's a subsequent article in, like, the local paper, and then you cut that out and you just give them a copy of that, because now it's like, well, if you're off your meds, so is the reporter that wrote the article. But don't go tacky. Don't make promises that you can't keep. We all know that there are many, many things, many of them very simple, that can be done to get rid of RFI issues, but don't go promising anything, because you just set expectations that if you don't meet them, it's just going to tick this person off even more. While there are a lot of ways that we can resolve RFI issues, and many of them very, very simple, do not rewire your neighbor's phone or their stereo or their house electrical system. Don't go for that earlier fists award, fumbled in stereos and TVs. Don't go for that. Do not do that. You can tell them what it is. You can inform them where they can get the devices that they can apply in order to make this stuff go away. But do not do that, because I can guarantee you, you'll mess something else up for them. This same neighbor from Hades thought that I messed up his CD player, and I hadn't even been on the air that day either, and he finally admitted that it was a CD player that he'd had sitting in the box for about a year, so my guess was it was defective and it was skipping, and he was trying to blame me. But you can bet if I had put some device on that, it would have been my fault.
You're in the middle of a talk by ARRL Volunteer Counsel and practicing attorney Paula Yushin, K9IR. We'll conclude her presentation delivered last month at the Dayton Hamvention in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, archives of which can be heard from the last 4 years on the RAIN archive page at therainreport.com.
Finally, do not, as I like to say, self-publish on the police blotter. Or to put it another way, if somebody goes over the top and calls the cop and you get that knock at your door and there's the uniformed officer there, don't go ballistic on this man. You do not want to be part of that week's police blotter. You do not want to be in our criminal justice system. Trust me. I read an article just the other day where somebody said there's one thing that law students learn in law school, and that's don't become part of the system. Believe it. Okay, let's go to our second ripped from the headlines. The Racine Journal Times, April 21 of this year. Now, this was an online article, at least. Racine's a little bit north of where I live in Illinois. The headline, Village Concerned About Safety of Ham Radio Tower. And there were some specific items in here, including the vertical antenna. It reaches a height of 62 feet. It's been there for 3 years. I trust my family with it. I assume the gentleman right down here said that. And this was in Mount Pleasant. They investigated after two residents complained in January that the tower might be interfering with their telephone and television reception. And it's at that point that officials determined, in their infinite wisdom, that perhaps there was no zoning approval that had been obtained. A little bit more background on this incident, and I don't have all the details, but I have a feeling we can get a right up to the minute update here. Who knew? The Sun had just received a heroic award from the Volunteer Center of Racine County for some relaying some tornado spotting report. When I last checked this, there were about 83 comments online. One of the reasons I wanted to point this out is this is, as a result, a particularly sympathetic situation. I mean, here this young man has done his duty and helped, you know, keep people safe in an area where we do have the risk of a lot of tornadoes. There's a huge commentary, a huge amount of public interest on all of this stuff. So why am I bringing this up? It's in part because, while a lot of this has to do with ordinances and what Fred talked about, it's the idea of let's make sure that we cooperate when we do have RFI issues. And I'm not suggesting that that wasn't done here. Frankly, I don't know what was or wasn't done here. But what I am using this to illustrate is if somebody makes a complaint on one thing, it can cascade like dominoes into something else. I do understand in this case that the understanding of the family was that the builder, the person who put up the tower, had gotten the necessary permissions. So maybe this is a cautionary note. It's hindsight is 20/20, but to make sure that that happens. Nevertheless, understand that if one issue escalates, there may be other issues, and you may be inviting closer scrutiny on other aspects of your installation, right down to literally crossing every T and dotting every I. It kind of underscores the idea that if and when at all possible, when you become aware of an issue, to try to nip it in the bud as soon as you can when it comes to RFI. Now, if these people didn't choose to voice their complaints until 3 years later and in their minds were suffering all that time silently, obviously there's not a whole lot that you can do. But when you do find out, address it. To recap, what should you do? You should avoid any private agreements that restrict your rights. Cooperate. Be diplomatic. Go back home and, I was going to say, kick the dog. Don't kick the dog. Kick something else that won't hurt you or the thing. But be diplomatic. Acknowledge what our responsibilities are as amateur radio operators, and then talk about what the responsibilities are of the person that's complaining to you. Don't fail to check for CCNRs. There's one thing that Jim's comment should resonate with you, is it's better to avoid that situation than to get yourself involved with it and have to try to fight it. Don't be a prop head and go tacky on people. Don't promise something that you cannot deliver. Don't get into rewiring the neighbor's stuff and showing your technical prowess and how cool you are with all this stuff. Don't go there. And do not argue with the man. Stay out of the system. If you do that, when it comes to RFI, don't be lost, be a survivor.
And that concludes our third and final excerpt from the Amateur Radio and Law Forum, held last month at the Dayton Hamvention in suburban Dayton, Ohio. This week, we heard from attorney and ARRL volunteer counsel Paula Yushin, K9IR. The RIN report is copyright 1990-2010. RAIN, all rights reserved. Now for Hap Holly, KC9RP, RAIN's founder and producer, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.